The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Okay, guys, listen, we are in a new hour of the show. The call-in number is 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. And right now I have Joe from Texas on the line. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
I'm fine, Kathy, and yourself?
I am doing well, Joe. I have to ask you, are you glued to your television watching the P. Diddy charges?
No, ma'am, I'm not.
What?
No, Joe, really?
Tell me, Dan, what were you telling me?
Yeah, so actually, during the break, I was surprised to see, who was it? It was Manglemush, said that his mother just called him really angry that she really wanted to watch Price is Right today, and it was actually usurped for coverage of the Diddy trial. So to fact check that, what I did is I went over and I looked at the local networks. Kathy, every single local network has dropped their daily regular coverage to get live coverage of the P. Diddy trial result. Is it that big of a news where all these, they're almost treating it like it's O.J. Simpson happening right now?
Yeah, you know, Joe, so that's why I was asking you, Joe, are you glued to your television, riveted to what is happening with P. Diddy? And I guess you're not, sir.
No, I am not. I happen to be at work. I'm one of the odd Americans that go to work every day.
Like, you would think this would be, hey, Kristen, I see you. Stay right there. Don't go anywhere yet. But, Joe, you would think this would be, I don't know, what did we find out last night? Donald Trump declares 60-day Gaza ceasefire agreed by Israel. You would think it would be that, right? Like, wow, after, I mean, what year are we in now with the Hamas war? Two years. And now Donald Trump has not only stopped a 30-year Wakanda and Congo war, not only has Donald Trump stopped the war with Pakistan and India, not only did Donald Trump stop the war with Israel and Iran, but now he just brokered a 60-day Gaza ceasefire. You would think we would be talking about that nonstop, but instead, everyone has stopped their normal movement to cover Diddy. What do you say, Joe?
Well, it doesn't matter how good Donald Trump has anything come out. They're never gonna let that be the top story. I mean, it doesn't make any difference what Donald Trump accomplishes in this 4 years or day to day. They're gonna play it down or play something else more important. I mean, just give the guy a break. He's winning, and most everything he's said he would do, he's working hard at it, accomplishing a lot. But they're never going to give him any credit because they're just hung up on themselves. And today, we'll just say if something came in front of the Senate today that Donald Trump walked in and half people are eating, they won't even agree that it's Donald Trump. I believe it would be a split vote. I believe the vice president would have to cast that winning vote to say it is Donald Trump.
I know, right? Hey, Joe, let me take this call and see what Christian has to say and if you can help me with that. Hey, Christian, how you doing?
Hi there. How are you?
I am doing well. How can I help you?
So I'm going to kind of strap my tinfoil hat on kind of tight here, and I'm wondering if that Diddy case wasn't thrown on purpose, given the amount of money that flows through him up and down from very important people. You know, as Adam pointed out, you know, they never dropped any kind of real smoking gun of things that they would have, you know, definitive evidence on, drug charges, you know, weapon possession, all that good stuff. So is it possible that that wasn't dropped intentionally so that they wouldn't convict him of anything and it relied upon a he said she said thing?
Thank you so much for calling in, Christian. You know what we do know, Joe, is that I know, right? I'm talking about P. Diddy, but Christian called, so let me just respond. He was found guilty on one thing, and according to the penalties, he could be facing up to 10 years. So he's not getting away with everything. I'm sure there's going to be an appeal and on and on. I think the big question is right now, I'm looking at it, all the cameras are on the door. What if P. Diddy walks out of the courtroom? I think people will really lose their mind. But Joe, I did not invite you on to talk about P. Diddy.
Okay, good.
I know. I wanted to talk to you because we have the big, beautiful bill, although Chuck Schumer entered in a change. He wanted to change the name.
I raise a point of order against page 1, lines 3 to 5 of the pending amendment, which violates section 313B1A of the Congressional Budget Act of 1974.
The point of order is sustained.
And so he was able to get the title of the bill changed from the One Big Beautiful Act to the Act. Like, that is where we're spending our... He didn't get anything else, I guess, he wanted, but he wanted to get the name change, and that is what our government... That's what our hard taxpaying dollars are hard at work at, Joe, I guess.
Well, you maybe a little bit before your time, but there was a great fighter. His name was Cassius Clay. Mm-hmm. Then he went under Muhammad Ali, and he won. It didn't matter about the name. So if we get it and it passes and it does what we want it to do, I don't really care about the name.
Joe, that's why I love you coming on, because, again, you always bring balance and perspective. Who cares, right? A horse by any other name is still a horse. We can still use it for whatever it is that we're going to use it by, and you're absolutely correct. But now that the big, beautiful bill, for all intents and purposes, will probably be voted on in the House today or tomorrow, and Donald Trump will sign it on Friday, and then we will move on to new and bigger problems. And one of those new and bigger problems, one that you and I've been talking a lot about on Saturdays anyway, is who's going to work these jobs. According to what Donald Trump and Scott Bessent, the secretary, has been doing, is really working hard to reshore investments back into this country. And right now, the last time I looked, we're looking at $5 to $7 trillion of investments and jobs coming back to America. And the question you've been asking since early this year is, who's going to work those jobs? And no one has really talked about it to the extent that you have and been so early at talking about it. And I just wanted you to come back on, and let's double click this to help people know after Friday, the world is still revolving and we have bigger problems right ahead of us. And I think it's going to be our low workforce participation rate.
Well, the only way you're going to get yourself out of this problem financially that America is in today, $37 trillion in the hole, you're going to have to work your way out of it. You can't argue your way out of it. I mean, look at the past 24 years. We've argued for 24 years, 12 years Democrat, 12 years Republican. We went from $5 trillion to $37 trillion. So what has arguing done? It hasn't done anything. It doesn't matter who the captain of the ship is. The problem is right now our ship's going down. It doesn't matter if it's a Democrat in the chair or Republican in the chair. We're going down as a ship, as a plane, as a train, because we're broke. Our system is broke, and all we do is argue about it. We don't fix anything, and there's your problem. And the only way to fix your debt is to quit wasting money. You got to quit spending money foolishly. We need to get people off the couch that's able to work to go to work. We need to reform a lot of these programs. And most of all, we need to work more in this country. That's the only way we're going to get our debt down is work ourselves out of it. We can wish it. We can pray for it. We can get somebody in that says he can cut $2 trillion out or whatever it is. But the bottom line is you have to work for it, and we're not doing it.
Yeah, you know, I've been talking a lot this morning with my friend Adam, who's joining me here in the studio, about the culture and, you know, and the fact that our culture is broken, and we're going to have to do a lot of work to change the culture. The reason why we have the type of representatives in office that we have is because of the culture. The reason why we have Zohran Mamdani, a radical Muslim, getting ready to be mayor of the largest and most economically influential city in the world, is not so much because it's his fault. It's because of our culture. Everything flows downhill from culture. And I think you're absolutely right. I think it would be great if we can go in with a scalpel and cut out $2 trillion. But as we just witnessed over the past several months, everyone want their hand in the bucket. Let me just play this clip for you, Joe. Do you have that Marsha Blackburn clip? Like, this should have been a no-brainer that we do not want to give Medicaid to illegals before we give it to our own American citizens. Do you have that clip ready?
No, I don't. Here it is. Sorry.
Millions of vulnerable Americans, including the disabled, elderly, and low-income children, depend on Medicaid for vital health care services. But waste, fraud, and abuse are pushing this program to the point of insolvency. According to one estimate, there were more than $1 trillion in improper payments over the last decade. To protect Medicaid for those who truly need it, this corruption must end, including by removing the 1.4 million illegal aliens who are currently exploiting the program. My amendment would close a loophole that allows illegal aliens to receive Medicaid coverage for up to 90 days by blocking federal taxpayer dollars from funding benefits for prospective beneficiaries until their citizenship or lawful presence is verified. I urge a yes vote on this amendment. Now I ask for the yeas and nays.
Yeah, and that was resoundingly defeated. She could not get the votes to remove roughly $1 trillion of improper payments going out to over 1 million illegal aliens who are getting the benefits. And yet we had Democrats and some Republicans say, oh, we can't cut Medicaid. We don't want people to have to work 80 hours just to get the Medicaid. We really need to stick it to the American people. What do you say, Joe?
Well, you know, the 80-hour rule is a stupid rule anyway. You know, 80 hours, they want people to work 80 hours a month? That's ridiculous. I work 80 hours a week, and I'm 75 years old. I don't understand 80 hours
Joe,
a month.
Joe, you got to start somewhere. We're going from zero to 80.
Well, I mean, you do that in a drag race. You do zero to 80 real quick. But you know, we get, look, the problem is, and you look back and she says that much in the last decade. That's Democrat and Republican presidents' administrations. Yeah. There's where this deal is. This, you know, we've colored this thing all wrong, but everybody's had a different brush in their hand all along. And nobody has stayed in the lines. We've got out of the lines. Now, again, I go 24 years in a row because, you know, the last time we balanced our budget was with Bill Clinton. He had a Republican Congress, and they worked together. There's a lot of reformers. We balanced our budget four times in a row, paid it down twice. What's wrong with the picture today? You tell me what's wrong. How do you go from $5 trillion to $37 trillion? And you're 24 years, 12 and 12. 12 years Democrat, 12 years Republican. Because all you do is argue. You don't fix anything. If we never fix it, we're going to crash. I don't care who the pilot is, who the captain is. Sooner or later, this ship will go down financially. And I guess the last person in the seat is going to get all the blame. But yet we look back and she talks about a decade.
Yeah.
Of course, it's been bad. It's been corrupt forever.
So let's pivot on that real quick. And let's talk about something we can fix, because you're right. And one of them is, again, we have $5 to $7 trillion of jobs and investments coming back to this country. And I'm just looking at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They say we have some growing gaps right now. We have an aging workforce. Baby boomers are retiring. We have a low birth rate in this country. We're not even replacing ourselves as Americans. We have a labor force participation rate that is continuously dropping. The number of people who are actually working is equivalent to those who were working during COVID and the shutdowns. That's a problem. We have a skill gap. And so let's talk about a fix real quick, because you had something that was very interesting. You said it. I didn't fully understand or appreciate it when you initially said it earlier this year. But over the months, I've come to realize this may be a solution. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, we have to get our immigration straightened out. We have to reform our immigration policy. We need to get rid of all the bad actors. There's no two ways about that. But while we're cleaning up all the bad actors in this country that are here illegal, we need to get all the bad actors off the street that are Americans too. They need to go to jail, and they need to pay the price also. But we have got to go back to like it was when we had Ellis Island. Ellis Island from 1894 to 1954, we brought 20 million people in this country to work in the factories and to get this country up to being what we appreciate it to being today. That's what we're going to have to do, because all the numbers you just read off are exactly on point. We do not have the labor force to take advantage of $7 trillion worth of new investment. We don't have the labor force today to get enough people working to balance our budget. We got too many people that are 25 to 55 years old sitting on the couch playing video games that are not working, and grandma's cooking for them with her Social Security money that may get cut 25%. So the train wreck is coming. The only way we can do is work ourselves out of it. But where are we going to get the workers? Not off the couch. We're going to have to do something, reform our immigration policy. And we can do that, and we can capitalize on that financially also. We can put a tariff on that labor. We can put a $25 a day tariff on that labor that the employer, I pay for four or five or six people. And that way, those people are here. They've been vetted. They got a special card. It's not a green card. It's a yellow card. They can not work just for me, work for anybody. I don't want them that they bound to me, only can work for me. If they stay a good person, stay out of trouble, stay here, will help this economy, that we need to bring those people to work and shore it up. That's not a pathway to citizenship. That's just a pathway to get employers and people in this country to balance our budget.
You know, I had you on once before, and you were telling me about how you have to go above and beyond to incentivize Americans to come into work at your very successful business. You want to tell that story?
Yes. And, you know, you travel around. I was in D.C. a couple of weeks ago at an energy summit. And I showed a little video of a bunch of help wanted signs all over America, hiring bonuses. And it didn't matter whether it was at a fast food place or a refinery. They're all needing people. We have to pay $100 a day extra as a stipend to our truck driver, our men and women that drive our trucks. We pay them a nice salary. We have hospital insurance. They have a 401k. They have vacation. But on top of that, we pay an extra $100 a day for those people to come to work, just to show up.
Just to show up.
Just to show up.
Above and beyond the 401k, above and beyond the 401k, above and beyond the insurance. Because right now, this past week, all they've been talking about insurance. Everybody want insurance, but you actually pay insurance. You actually pay a 401k, and you still have to go above and beyond to get Americans off the couch and at work. Is that true?
Yeah. Yes, ma'am, and I'm not isolated. I'm not the only one. I visit with people every day that are having the same problem. You look at what's going on in California right now. You got crops rotting in the fields. And it's, you know, because that's a tough job, and usually it's people that come across the border and do that work and go back. Those people are scared to even come to work. So they're deciding not to do it. So we're going to have a negative impact to our economy if we don't balance this thing very quickly.
And right now, no one is talking about it, because today we're only talking about Donald Trump. Oh, look. So today we're only talking about not Donald Trump, but P. Diddy. I wish we could be talking about Donald Trump. But today we're only talking about P. Diddy. Yesterday we were only talking about, the big, beautiful bill. Tomorrow, I don't know what we'll be talking about. But eventually we're going to have to talk about who's going to work the jobs. Otherwise, you said once before, we're going to have, and this does happen, where the majority of the production is done in another country and we only put a piece of paper on it and then they say made in America, but we don't get any of the benefit to moving people out of poverty and into a working class situation.
Well, you're right. What we need to do, if we'll bring the labor force up in this country, tax those people here. Let them rent an apartment or buy a house here, buy a car, buy their work gloves and so forth. That payroll will turn over seven times in our local economy instead of Taiwan or Japan or some other country. We need to bring that work into this country. We got to figure out how to do that and have a good system and enable people to do that. And that rewards our taxpayers then, because we have more people pulling the load. Right now, we don't have enough people pulling our load. Our load is too heavy. We're bogged down. If we keep it up, doesn't matter who the captain is, this ship will crash.
And I think we will both agree, we wish we can get a sledgehammer and cut trillions of dollars out of our budget. But again, y'all just watched our legislators. I just played the clip of Marsha Blackburn. Like, that should have been an easy one, right? Let's pass a 90-day verification period where taxpayer dollars do not pay for someone until a 90-day grace period. And during that 90-day grace period, we verify if they're illegal or not. And that got voted down. It's so ridiculous. We can't even get that passed. And yet we have people saying we need to just cut everything. It ain't happening. And that's the reality.
You're right. And I love the way you talk. It ain't happening.
It ain't. I know. Like, it's not. No, it ain't. Okay.
No, Joe. It ain't.
Joe from Texas.com. You guys can find out more about Joe from Texas by Mr. Joe Penland by going to joefromtexas.com, a businessman turned political activist. You said you're in your 70s, but you got grandbabies and you got people like me that you are working hard for. So thank you so much, Joe, for being in the fight.
God bless. Have a great day.
Blessings. Now I will create my own opportunities. How about that? Because we have a place to be. We have somewhere that we're all going. Now, let me just say, I know everyone has been talking about this, but I have to just mention it. Disastrous rebrand campaign by Jaguar. If you're rich, that's how you pronounce it. Jaguar. They had a disastrous rebrand campaign featuring men in skirts, weird colors, weirder looking people, all about being non-binary. And they called it copying nothing. They only sold 49 vehicles.
Oh!
Last month.
So 49 last month?
They sold 49 vehicles last month versus same time last year, 1,961 vehicles. Yeah.
How are they still in business?
That's a perfect example of go woke, go broke. Yeah. And I love it. I love it. I love it. I hope they all lose their jobs. I don't even care. It's like these, like you said earlier, it's all about the money. They don't care. They're virtue signaling, but it's actually bleeding into the culture, bleeding into how we, it's one thing if, you know, what is it? Joseph said on YouTube, Joseph, I'm reading your words, Joseph. Joseph said, can we just talk conservative versus liberal? That's the glaringly obvious disparity rather than white and black. Skin color keeps the division alive and well. And in the studio, helping me kind of discern all of this is my friend Adam Coleman. He is the founder of Wrong Speak Publishing, co-founder of Thirst Entertainment, and author of The Children We Left Behind. I'm saying all of this to set you up real pretty here, Adam, to talk about your book and other things. But yes, the issue, you're right, Joseph. I say my people are not people who look like me. My people are people who think in large part the way that I think. I believe there is something bigger than myself, right? Mm-hmm. I call him Jesus. Vivek, he's a Hindu guy. I mean, he's a Hindu, but he believes in something bigger than himself. I believe in my family, and my family belonged to me and not the government. I believe that I'm a patriot. I love this country. I would have laid my life down. I consciously made the decision that if I was called to lay my life down when I was in the military for 10 years, I would have done it because I believe in something bigger than myself. I love America and I want to see America and her people do well. Mm-hmm. Those are my people, right? People who think like that, that I want to protect the innocence of my children. Those are my people. However, the left has created a whole industry on using the color of my skin as a black person to, it's more than just words. These people are changing policies that actually impact what is being taught in my children's school. Mm-hmm. Using my color, they're changing policies that decide, you know, if we're going to have 15-minute cities and if, you know, if we should be shut down, schools should be shut down, what school system my kid could go to, and if they're trapped in that zip code or if I as a parent can move them out of that. So yes, Joseph, I would love to not have to talk about the color of my skin. In fact, I never talked about the color of my skin until I got into the world of politics. And all of a sudden, that's what I started talking all the time about. Everyone wanted to talk to me about the color of my skin. I thought that was very strange. Yeah. I had lived a long life, never really talking about the color of my skin. Get into politics, and now all of a sudden, that's all I'm talking about. Go.
Granted, my first book is Black Victim to Black Victor.
talking about color.
Talking about color. But the theme of the book is essentially
your second book.
The first one.
Okay.
Yeah. The theme of Black Victim to Black Victor was that we have more in common than we do different.
Yeah.
And so the race element throughout the book, I'm in one context, I might bring up black, and other contexts, I'm not mentioning race whatsoever. And I'm doing that purposefully throughout the book because it's a much bigger problem. So victimhood, you can take from one group of people or one single individual and bring it on to somebody else. It's the same thing. You can replace the object or you can replace the national origin of the people, the demographic of the people. And it victimhood looks the same no matter where you go. So I wanted to talk about that. Obviously, the black victimhood element that some black people possess, I wanted to talk about that because it is a cultural element, but it exists everywhere. There are people who limit themselves because they think that someone else has to lift them up for them to somewhat succeed. And that's what we talk about the government. Within the book, I do have elements talking about the government, relying on the government, staying a victim, saying, I can't even feed myself unless the government gives me money to feed myself. It's a very debilitating mindset to have. And I'm saying it from a humble stance because there are parts of my life where I felt that way about different aspects of my life that weren't going well, seeing myself as a victim of circumstances, unable to do certain things and overcoming that. So the book is really about uniting humanity in many ways, even through pain, and recognizing that we have the shared interests and the shared pain, and also how to overcome certain obstacles, or at least giving people the hope that they can overcome them.
Yeah, hope is so important.
Absolutely.
And I think that we have robbed our children of real hope, a hope that builds and not destroys.
Yeah.
And I think when we see our children out here protesting and rioting and chanting ridiculous chants about Israel, you know, and all those other things, and they're just so violent and they're doing things that most of us are looking at like, oh my goodness, what in the world? These are children who are, for the most part, many of them, yes, you have puppeteers who are, you know, pulling the strings and they know exactly what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But the overwhelming majority of these children are looking for purpose. They're Absolutely. Looking for, why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing with my time? And I think one of the most dangerous things we do as parents is that we allow 18, 19 years with our babies under our roofs to go by, and we never pause long enough to make sure they know they have a purpose,
yeah.
that they are valuable, that you have a there's a plan for your life. There's a destination, right? And we send them out into the world and to UPenn and other places like blank checks. Mm-hmm. And what happens to a blank check? Somebody is going to come along and write in on that blank check and cash it for themselves, right?
Right.
And I think we have a lot of our children who have left the home with not really knowing who they are, not really understanding their true identity. And they go out here into a big, bad world that will eat you up. Mm-hmm. And they've written onto your child's blank check. And now they got your baby out here acting in all kinds of ways, right?
Yeah.
And I think, again, it goes back to parenting. It goes back to not being selfish as parents. You had a line that I read in your book. You wrote, "I wrote this book for many reasons, but mainly to highlight our culture's blind spot." And that's blind spot being the intersection of our selfishness and our willingness to sacrifice for our children.
Yeah.
That really, and I was talking to my mom about something else, but I was talking to her about, we were talking about my own life with my children and my parenting. And I was going, when I was a young woman, I was going to rule the world. I got my education. I'm in the Wall Street environment. I'm in corporate America. I'm an adjunct professor of corporate finance. I'm doing the thing, okay? I'm getting into media, and then I have children. And now I'm looking at these babies, and I'm realizing that they're spending more time at the daycare than they are at home with me, right? So someone else is writing on my babies, right? Because they're spending 10, 12 hours with these people while I'm working 10 to 12 hours for someone else. And then my babies are getting ready to go into public school system. And now 10 years ago, I saw 10 years ago what most people are just waking up to with this alphabet mafia coming in and LGBTQ and all this foolishness. And then you have, you know, CRT, DEI. And I'm like, no, I'm going to really come out of the workforce. I'm going to homeschool our children for their most formative years.
Right.
And that's a sacrifice because sure. I the years I would have spent building my own personal empire, I feel like I sacrificed so that I could give it to the best of my years to my children.
Yeah.
I am not doing what I had envisioned I would be doing with my time and myself and how I would be ruling the world, but I'm looking at my babies and I'm so grateful to God that somehow a light bulb went off in my mind. And I shifted my priorities of what was most important to my children.
Yeah. And thank you for sharing your story and you recognizing the need to sacrifice for your children. I've said before that the most important thing to a child is something that you cannot purchase. No one can purchase. And it's time.
Yes.
Right? We can't buy time. We can't exchange it for something else. The richest man in the world can't buy time. And that is the most valuable thing to a child because that's what they remember. They remember that not the car that you bought them, not the toy that you bought them, that you went to Disneyland. Obviously, they might remember that, but it's the moment, right? It's that time. It's when they had their first heartbreak and you sat down with them and you talked to them about it. It's that time when they hurt themselves and you were there to be with them. That's what they remember. That's what's valuable to them. Like I went to Disney World and I forget a lot of stuff because that part wasn't really important. But I do remember hanging out with my mom.
Right.
Right. And that's because she invested that time. And as an adult, I can look back and say, my mom sacrificed and did all this stuff on her own to try and spend time with her kids. You know, to drive by herself from New York to Florida, you know, 3 years in a row, I think it was like 3 years in a row going down to Disney, paying for everything on her own and to take us to all these parks on her own to spend time with us and drive all the way back by herself. Like that is my mom investing her time with us. It was less about Disney and more about that bonding time with my mom.
Yeah, exactly. But continue with your book, your new book, mm-hmm. The Children We Left Behind, and continue to weave that thought about the selfishness. I loved how you said it. This is the intersection of our selfishness and our willingness to sacrifice for our children.
Yeah, so there is an element that exists within our culture. So like Jonathan Haidt talks about helicopter parents.
Right.
Right. And I honestly tend to see that from a certain economic class of people who can afford to be helicopter parents. Right. That's usually when they kind of come into play. It's not 100%, but that's, you know, anecdotally what I see. But I see a culture of the adults get to select themselves when they want to select themselves, where it's very obvious this is not going to help your kids, or making choices prior to your children being born that are for you and not for your potential children. So we don't talk about family planning. As a matter of fact, if we talk about family planning, it's usually about
to abort.
Well, there's that. Yes. It's usually about birth control of some sort.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is family planning is the guy that you just went on a second date with. Are you asking him if he wants children? What are his morals? What is his family like? What does he care about? What does he value? Is he a good person? Like all these different questions. Are you actually asking that? Are you saying he looks good and he makes a lot of money? You know, or he has potential. Like what are you actually valuing? And even from the guy's perspective, yeah, she's hot. That's great. But is she going to be a good mother to your kids? Mm-hmm. Is she even going to be a good wife? You know, are these things that you're asking yourself, or are you just rolling in a sexual relationship into a marriage and then saying, I can't, what's wrong with women as they get a divorce 5 years later? It's like, no, you didn't plan this properly. You were just moving how you wanted to move. But the selfishness element comes in when the adults choose themselves consistently. And you see this a lot with divorce. Every person who gets divorced thinks that their situation is different. Everyone acknowledges that divorce is terrible for kids, but they say, but my circumstance is different. So everyone chooses themselves rather than saying, you know what, I'm going to swallow this pride and try to work things out. And granted, it's a relationship, so it's two people. And even if one person wants, it doesn't mean that they can save a relationship. But it's a greater problem of the adults choosing themselves, saying, I'll just throw them into therapy. Or they tell themselves, if I'm happy, my children will be happy, which is not how kids operate. You know, so they're saying all these different mantras to themselves.
We have, do I have time to take this caller? Okay, hey, I have a caller, Joe. You want to jump in on this conversation?
Hey, Kathy, I was the Joseph you were referring to earlier.
Yes, thank you so much for calling back.
You're welcome, and I respect you tremendously.
Thank you.
That was not a mandate in my comments. That was a request, because we have no further to look back than the last general election as to who spoke race and who didn't. And the most disgusting thing I saw in all those campaign stump speeches and videos was Joe Biden saying, they're going to put you all back in chains. That guy was such a hypocrite, and that hurt me. That hurt me because I came from the inner city, and we never saw color. We saw friends. We saw good people. We saw bad people. And my parents were heavily involved in politics. And they told us to treat people as a separate entity, not as a race. I mean, my grandparents came here from Italy, and some of them lived in sewers. But I'm not living that. And I'm not dwelling on that. And it's just that it's gotten to the point where, you know, these divisions and these separations are going to continue to be alive and well. And it just hurts me as a person to see, you know, the victimhood, just the general victimhood that exists.
Yeah, I agree, Joe. And it's not even real. I was talking to my uncle, who is, oh my goodness, he's so woke. He's black and he's so woke. This is an uncle, Joe, who fled California because of the crime and all of the illegal activity and can't afford his home to move to Texas. And I was like, okay, uncle, so now you're going to stop voting like a Democrat? And he was like, no, I'm going to be black and Democrat until I die. But I was talking to him last night about this same thing, is that I mean, I grew up very impoverished, and no one ever looked at me and said, Kathy, you're black, you're a woman, you're poor, hang it up, kid. No one ever told me that.
Yeah.
No one ever put chains around my brain and made me feel like I had no options. Yet today, my babies are living very well. Two-parent household. They wake up and their mom and daddy are at it, right? Trying to give them a wonderful life. And yet they go into one of the school they go to is in the top 10 for the state. And everywhere they look, they're a victim. And I'm like, and that just doesn't, but it's not true. I remember when I ran against Madeline Dean in 2020. I tell this story on the other side of the break. Dan's telling me, break. Okay, call in. Joe, thank you so much for calling in, Joe. The number to call in, 855-839-1210. Hey, guys, we are at the end. When I looked up and Dan said, okay, well, we're going to close out, I was like, what? I'm at the end already? Like, it just came so fast. Well, Dan, I have enjoyed my time here. I think you guys have someone else coming in to fill in tomorrow, but this has been a blast. I have Helen. Helen, you're so kind. You've been on hold for a minute. Can you get your question in very quickly?
Yes. I am in my car driving back. I have just finished a training with five directors from the Logan section of Philadelphia. And the main theme we talked about with growth mindset was believing in your potential and not letting what others think you should be or do hold you back. And there was someone there who's going for her doctorate, someone who's finishing her high school diploma. So all levels, but the whole thing was no excuses. We all have potential. So you inspired me. I love hearing you talk, Kathy. So thank you for all you do.
Oh, Helen, thank you so much for holding on just to tell me that. I appreciate it. I take it. But that's also why I have my song, You Can't Stop Me, right? You're always going to have somebody trying to tell you who you are, what you can and cannot do. I will determine right. who I am. I will determine right. how far I go and when I want to sit down, right? That has always been my plan. So, Helen, thank you so much for calling in. I'm going to give you Adam Coleman. He has been my guest these past 2 hours. He is the founder of Wrong Speak Publishing, co-founder of Thirst Entertainment, and author of The Children We Left Behind. I'm going to give it over to you. What do you want to say?
What do I want to say? I feel like I say so much, I don't even know where to start. let's talk about marriage, okay. Since my wife is sitting right next to me.
Yes.
I think that we need... It sounds kind of weird to say, but we need better marriage propaganda. I think that marriage gets a bad rap. And I think that there are far more healthy, loving couples that exist out there. They just don't have a microphone in front of them. We see way more of the dysfunction, way more of the bad news, the horror stories.
Yeah.
But when you start, and specifically me, when I start talking about how much I love my wife and the things that we do, I get so many people sharing their stories. So, you know, for people who are out there, don't lose hope when it comes to these relationships. Keep moving forward. Don't get demoralized by your friend who's striking out. Just keep going, because everything that is of value is hard to get. And so yeah. It took me a long time to find my wife.
Yay. Thank you so much. Look at her over here blushing. I love it. Why do I have violin music in my ear? Is it time for me to go already?
So anytime Dawn must talk about marriage and such, we use a theme on our show. That's what you have under. So just for effect, sometimes we have bed music on our show that we use for effect there, Kathy.
I love it. I love it. I heard the violins and it went perfectly.
Yeah.
With what you're saying. Yes, this has just been a great time. I mean, marriage. Woo, that's a hard institution, boy, but you're right. It's so worth it, right? Yeah. It's two individuals coming together and saying, you know what? We're going to be one. Yeah. And there's a lot of breaking that has to be done to go from two distinct individuals into one mind, one body, one soul, one purpose, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that have to fall to the wayside, and it is not an easy thing. It's so much easier actually being a parent, because you see this little person, you're like, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
But with your mate, it's like, not tonight or not today. I'm not feeling you right now, right? But, and that is the ups and the downs. But here we are, guys, at the end. And let me just leave you with this. You are not crazy. As much as the world will tell you that you are not crazy. You are not overreacting. You are not woke. You are conscious. You are awake. And now that you are awake, it's time to move, not in anger, but in purpose. Because why? Faith is still necessary. Family still matters. And this country is still worth fighting for. You've been listening to Kathy Barnett filling in for the Don Stensland on the Don Stensland Show. Check me out this Saturday, 10 to 11, right here on the number one talk radio station in Philadelphia. Blessings!
Don Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.